Welcome to the Deep Dive. This is where we take the sources you send us, dig in, and pull out the key insights. Basically, we give you a shortcut to getting informed without getting totally overwhelmed. Today, we're jumping into some really fascinating material from our listener, The Learner. It's a collection exploring connections between, well, different spiritual ideas and interpretations of religious texts.
That's right. And it's quite a mix. We've got analyses looking at Judaism, Christianity, Islam, the Abrahamic faiths, plus discussions on creation stories, different takes on personal growth.
Okay.
So our mission really for this deep dive is to shine a light on maybe some surprising connections here and offer you, the learner, a kind of clearer path through these pretty complex ideas.
Okay, let's unpack this then. One of the first things that really stood out to me was visual, how the source differentiates the divine. Using different fonts for God YHVH, then God for Jesus and God for Allah. What's the idea behind that?
Yeah, that's quite striking. And, you know, the key insight here for you, the learner, isn't that it's suggesting like three totally separate gods. Not at all. It's presenting them as three distinct lived expressions or maybe messages,
yeah,
but originating from the same divine source.
Okay.
So the font change is more like a visual cue. It acknowledges the, let's say, unique historical path, the cultural context each faith developed in.
Right.
It's about respecting those individual journeys while hinting at that potential shared origin.
That's a really interesting way to put it. And I guess that links to this concept mentioned spiritual linguistics.
It does, yeah.
Can you tell us a bit more about what that means in this context?
Sure. So spiritual linguistics, as it's laid out here, is basically a method for engaging with these texts that goes, you know, beyond just the literal meaning.
Okay.
It encourages looking for the deeper stuff, the symbolic meanings. How do these texts make us think? How do they resonate emotionally? What beliefs do they spark? What desires do they tap into? The source kind of suggests that as we grow, our whole understanding of language evolves anyway. And this approach helps us find those maybe hidden spiritual messages that speak to our own growth, our shared human condition.
So the takeaway for the learner is,
yeah,
maybe these old texts are less about hard rules and more like frameworks.
Exactly. Frameworks for understanding ourselves and the world.
Mm.
Less literal instruction, more metaphorical map, perhaps.
Okay, so building on that, different divine expressions. The sources also dive into how we understand ourselves, right?
Yeah.
Within these frameworks, there's this really compelling metaphor from the Torah man as a tree of knowledge. Could you walk us through that one?
Yeah, this one seems pretty central. It's presented as foundational. So Adam is seen as the mind. Eve represents the heart.
Right.
And the serpent.
That's our desires.
Okay, mind, heart, desires.
And here's where it gets, well, pretty specific.
Yeah.
The fruits of good and evil.
Yeah.
They're interpreted symbolically as testicles.
Right.
And the semen is the juice representing the power of creation itself.
Wow. Okay. That's very direct. It is. It's a very grounded metaphor linking our biology right into these big spiritual concepts. And the insight for you, the learner, seems to be that our physical selves, our inner lives, they're deeply woven into these core narratives.
That's a very particular reading, though.
Yeah.
Did the sources explore other symbolic angles, or was this the main focus?
This interpretation is definitely highlighted in the material we received, and it builds from there, adding a psychological layer.
Absolutely.
Well, the prostate gets linked to the ego.
The ego.
Yeah, that part of us that sort of allows our desires, the serpent, to act out in the world. And maybe even more striking, inflicting evil on someone else, it's described as figuratively sodomizing oneself.
Goodness. So harming others is harming yourself.
Deeply harming yourself, yeah. It really pulls the whole concept of morality inward, makes it incredibly personal.
Then the text brings in Jesus as bread and wine. How does that metaphor connect or add to the tree of knowledge idea?
Right. So the symbolism there is Jesus as bread, the flesh, the sort of container, and wine as blood, love, the contents inside the container. This builds on the Moses metaphor, the tree metaphor. So the learner, you could maybe think of it like this. The Moses tree metaphor gives the intellectual structure for morality.
Okay. The framework.
Right. And the Jesus metaphor offers a pathway for, let's say, emotional and spiritual fulfillment within that structure.
Filling the container.
Exactly. It's about knowing what's right, but then also cultivating the inner state, the love, to actually embody it. The act of communion, taking the bread and wine, is framed as a kind of self-awakening, a way to foster inner love, connect with a higher consciousness.
This emphasis on individual understanding, inner work, it seems to lead into how the sources talk about the journey of self-discovery itself. There's discussion about how our understanding of words changes over time and this idea of conscience.
Yes, that journey is described as this gradual unfolding. We start with very literal meanings as kids, right?
True.
And ideally move towards grasping the deeper spiritual dimensions later in life. And this all happens with this growing awareness that, well, we're mortal.
Right, that looms.
And conscience, specifically, is defined as this internal kind of separate space. It's where we weigh thoughts against feelings. And a soul, that's described as a conscience that's sort of woken up to a connection with the divine.
And the key seems to be balance. Finding harmony inside.
Precisely. The source really stresses how vital it is to get our thoughts, feelings, beliefs, and desires working together in harmony. That's how we avoid moral mistakes. Life is painted as this garden of moral experiences.
A garden?
Yeah, where we learn by watching others metaphorically, picking their fruits, seeing their choices and outcomes. But initially, we're kind of forbidden from picking our own fruit, from directly knowing ourselves.
Hmm.
There is also this powerful image of life as a mountain. We get different views as we get older, as we climb higher. It suggests this inner path of discovery that unfolds over our lifetime. You know, it reminds me of how a child understands love versus how an adult might. It's a whole journey of understanding.
Now, the part about guilt, shame, and humiliation, that was really interesting, how they're presented not just negatively, but maybe as tools for growth.
Exactly. The source breaks guilt down into three levels. There's embarrassment that's more physical, social faux pas, maybe.
Okay.
Then shame, which hits closer to home, relates to our character, who we think we are.
Right.
And then humiliation, which is the deepest level, touching our conscience, our soul.
Mm-hmm.
And these distinctions are apparently drawn from the Adam and Eve story.
Yeah. Okay.
But the really fascinating part is that acknowledging these types of guilt is framed as absolutely essential for self-awareness and for moving towards something called cheesed.
Cheesed.
Yeah, it's translated as inner loyalty or self-love.
Yeah.
But it seems deeper than just liking yourself. It's like a deep internal commitment to your own growth, your own well-being.
Which comes from understanding guilt.
Constructively understanding it, yes. That's what the source suggests. And conversely, blaming other people, that's shown as a huge roadblock. Stops you measuring yourself, stops you learning from what happened.
The sources also reinterpret some religious concepts for today, don't they?
Yeah.
Like the idea of Satan.
Yes, Satan gets reframed. It's presented as the stranger within, or even quite graphically, the malevolent penis.
Wow.
Often used, it seems, to personify sexual acts that are disapproved of, but also representing our own internal conflicts, our shadow side, you might say.
So less of an external entity, more internal struggle.
That seems to be the direction. And a really key idea that pops up is that there's no literal word of God that doesn't also have a figurative word of God.
Meaning
we should always look beyond the surface. There's always a deeper layer.
Okay.
And there's that bathroom metaphor.
Oh, yeah, the different ages in the bathroom.
Right. The infant, the child, older child, teenager.
Mm.
It's used to show the stages of spiritual development. And that growing need for privacy, for a direct personal relationship with the divine, away from others.
Cultivating inner space.
Exactly. Inner space for self-discovery. And ultimately, the goal seems to be becoming your own best friend, really knowing and accepting yourself.
I wonder if some listeners might find that modern take, especially on Satan, a bit controversial. Did the sources kind of anticipate that?
That's a fair question. The sources don't seem to frame these as literal replacements, more like alternative lenses, ways to understand timeless human struggles and spiritual growth in a contemporary light. It's presented more as an offering of perspective, I think.
Okay. Moving to interfaith perspectives then, there seemed to be a very clear message there.
Oh, absolutely. A strong, explicit call for tolerance and mutual understanding. The sources really push for Jews, Christians, and Muslims to actively learn from one another, to build a sense of shared humanity, a we that goes beyond divisions.
Mm.
And any desire to, you know, wipe out other faiths or groups, that's flatly called aberrant.
So a rejection of extremism.
Definitely. And there's a real stress on giving individuals space. Space to reconcile their own personal lives. Sexuality is mentioned directly with their own understanding of God.
Yeah.
Without external judgment.
And it touches on history too, right? Avoiding blame.
Yes. It talks about how our understanding of history evolves. And the importance of not blaming entire groups for what individuals did. Using examples like the death of Jesus or the Prophet Muhammad saying we shouldn't hold modern groups accountable for those historical events.
That focus on the individual, it leads back to that recurring theme. Self-love and inner work seem crucial.
Absolutely central. It keeps coming back to that. Concepts like self-centering, setting up healthy internal borders, these aren't presented as selfish. Not at all. They're framed as essential first steps for real self-awareness.
So putting yourself first in a healthy way isn't bad.
It's crucial, according to these sources, crucial for growth. There's that lovely image of the heart becoming a foci in your life's ellipse.
Like creating a dedicated space for yourself.
Precisely. A personal space for development. And ultimately, the sources state it pretty plainly. Redemption for sins is an individual task. It's on you.
And that reverse Ten Commandments idea was striking.
Wasn't it? Starting with don't covet yourself. It just powerfully underlines that self-acceptance isn't just nice to have. It's the very foundation, the bedrock for your whole faith journey.
Wow, yeah, that is quite a reversal.
And finally, there were some other really vivid metaphors for spiritual progress. Life is a journey was one.
Yes, that's a big one. Life is a journey, and Jesus is presented sometimes as a tour guide, or even as the embodiment of self-love itself leading the way.
And hell.
Hell gets reimagined, too. Not, you know, fire and brimstone.
Right.
But more like the basement of our spiritual edifice. It's where our unacknowledged desires hang out.
Yeah.
And facing that basement, those desires, without fear that's presented as vital for growth.
Confronting the basement. Okay.
Even orgasm gets mentioned.
Yeah.
As a moment where you can really connect deeply with the creation story. Take it to heart.
Really?
Yeah. And the importance of inner dialogue, literally talking about yourself to yourself, is stressed again and again. Crucial for moral development. Okay, so let's try and wrap this up for the learner. In this deep dive, we've really explored the rich metaphorical layers in these religious texts, that whole journey of self-discovery through understanding things like guilt and shame, that vital call for interfaith tolerance, and maybe most fundamentally, the foundational role of self-love and spiritual growth, all drawn from this really diverse set of sources you sent in.
Yeah, it's clear these texts are seen as having so many layers of meaning. They really seem to invite, even demand, ongoing personal reflection.
Definitely.
And what really seems to shine through overall is a shift towards a more internal, deeply personal understanding of spirituality, one that emphasizes self-awareness, compassion for yourself and others, and genuine connection, maybe less focus on strict dogma and external judgment.
So here's a final thought for you, the learner, something to really chew on. Which of all these metaphors we discussed, the tree, the journey, the basement, the garden, which one resonates most strongly with your sense of self, your spiritual path right now? And be ask yourself, how might looking at these ancient stories, these old concepts through this kind of modern psychological lens, how might that unlock some new, maybe surprising insights into your own head, heart, and soul? Thanks so much for joining us for this deep dive.